This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday afternoon, March the 7th, 2008.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Soybeans fall from grace this week and a cost of $1.80. Is there more to come? We'll ask that question and many more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Chip Flory at Pro Farmer in Iowa. Our panelists today are Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, and Kirk Kimball of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, in Chicago this week, as we already said, futures for beans lost more than $1.80, $1.81, in fact, in the nearby March contract. Chuck Shelby, is there more to come?
I think a little bit when you look at the probably another maybe 30, 40 cents, and we're finding out how much fund influence we have in this price inflated here in the through the winter.
Dan Zwicker?
Yeah, I think there's probably another dollar to go over a 2 to 3 week period.
And Kurt Kimmel?
Well, if you look at the January break, it was basically $1.50 in the beans or 60 or so. So we got another 50, 60 cents for that, then probably, like Dan said, probably another 50 after that.
Soy complex to finish the week like this, the March contract at 1571 high, the low at 1341. Settlement price down $1.81 at $13.41 for the lead option March. November beans at $13.11.5, settled $1.14.5 lower from last week. Where do you see them in the cycle at this point?
Soybeans just finished up week six of an 8 to 9 week cycle. So I think we've got two more weeks here to find a cycle low that would put kind of a cycle low sometime the week of March 17th. And then we'll see where we go from there. The depth of the correction that we've seen so far, and if it is extended as we go on into early next week, which implies we're going to see beans down 50 cents Sunday night, would indicate that we've probably shifted the overall trend from the higher climb that we've seen since August to something more in a sideways to down or so.
Well, is it the beginning of the end, do you think?
Or? Well, it needs watching close. You know, technically, we record weekly price reversals of downside. We also, you know, took out the previous lows, and it's kind of negative on the momentum indicators. And fundamentally, we're looking at a good Brazilian crop, and those beans coming on the marketplace, demand could possibly slow here for a while. So with beans sort of fundamentally and technically negative here, it like I say, it could drift sideways lower for some time.
I think the fundamental side comes back in. We got a supply and demand report coming out Tuesday. Pretty tight numbers we had last month, and with the exports we've had, we're going to probably see that tighten up a little bit. We'd expect that would help this market out find a bottom.
So you're thinking that we could move higher yet?
Well, we got a lot of information to go. I mean, it's still a world market. World supplies are still tight. We still got to prove the acres. We got to prove the yield. All those things that got to come into play. But I think you just saw money move away from the market. And certainly the higher you go, the more percentage of the move, you know, it just makes some big numbers when we move like this.
November beans at $13.11.5 are below the February baseline figures for crop insurance, which is $13.36 for the RA and CRC, I suppose. Did you get producers to take advantage of that before it happened?
Well, part of it, Todd. All along, we've said scale and sell. Sell what you can into cash with calls to cover, and then put options on the rest. But, I mean, farmers are certainly not aggressively sold, but got things going. I think some of them have sold some things.
Yeah, we've been promoting scale up sell, and it's awful. This is why we do it, because you get downs like this, it's awful hard to sell. But we pushed cash sales up to 40% and didn't get some puts on. But we like those $10 bean puts in that 25-cent area.
How do producers handle crop insurance at this point, do you think, for soybeans only?
Well, I think I don't really see a whole lot of changes from what I've picked up talking to insurance people on farmers. I do think that maybe CRC is probably the most popular product, but there's a lot of guys going with GRIP. They're going to belly up and pay the price and go and bet on the big decline between now and next October. So I think I think crop insurance sales are actually going to increase Corn Belt wide.
Is there a difference regionally when you talk to producers as to what they think they're going to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you got to look at your own individual farm and see if you need a revenue-based policy. The CRC and RAs are based on your individual farm and your individual needs. If you get into the other type policies as a county average, and again, you're basically buying a pretty valuable put possibly in the long haul.
I would suggest that one of the places producers can, and this is a commercial actually, but one of the places producers can go, remember I work for U of I Extension, is the FarmDoc website. And for anybody in the Midwest, the 12 states in the Midwest, they can pick their state, pick their county, pick their crop, pick their APH, and they can see all the premiums across the board and compare everything, including the BYE, if they want to pick up the biotech yield endorsement. It's all on the FarmDoc website. The easiest way, if you don't know where the site is itself, is just to type FarmDoc into Google. It's the first thing, and then look on the left-hand side of the page and hit crop insurance. So let's finish with that. Move on to corn. March contract, a 564 top for this week, a low at $5.28. Their settlement price down just 12.5 cents at 533.5, December at 559.25. 5.5 cents lower. That's a awfully good outing given the $1.81 that we dropped in the soybeans, don't you think?
Yeah, corn hung in there. It's probably got another 20-25 cents down, but corn's probably longer term a little bit more fundamentally friendly. We feel there's going to be a lot less corn acres than what the trade's looking at. Corn demand's still fairly good, so we feel corn's going to have some good value and pullbacks in here.
Well, beans are leading corn down. I mean, I don't think corn would have closed where it did here on Friday without the big decline that we saw in soybeans. Now, I think the synthetics indicated that maybe corn futures would maybe be down 6 or 7 cents on Sunday night. So if that would be the case, provided a limit down in soybeans would not pull corn down further Sunday night, corn basically still stays above the trend line. If you drew one off of the middle January low connected to the mid-February low. So corn did not do any real serious chart damage. We did close out the week with a reversal down, but I think a lot of that basically came from spillover weakness from soybeans.
Chuck, when we talked to your partner at Risk Management Commodities on Friday afternoon, he discussed weakness in the beans as it refers to demand, because the numbers have not been good the last couple of weeks. Would you see the same thing in the corn market?
Well, I think it goes back to value, and as a producer, I think you want to look at taking advantage of these are still good prices in corn, Todd, and if you haven't done enough selling, it's still valuable to get something done, but certainly you got to watch the demand is still a function here that's very important to all these commodities, and we got to watch and see if that demand sticks around. South American beans are coming online, so that obviously is going to put another product available to the market in the soybeans that's not there in the corn right now.
Yeah, so, well, you know, a good sale, but to, and I don't think anybody argued that the price we have for corn isn't a good sale, but to what level on new crop?
Well, I think our plan is to be 100% sold before we get to the field. Actually, in the last 2 days, I spent 2 days at a seminar that Purdue and the Farm Credit put on. The last 2 days, all we talked about was watching for the beginning of the end of when these markets go the other way and how our cost of production are the problem. And we've had markets, bull markets before, but the cost of production didn't climb behind us. So they were talking about today, if you bought your inputs now, corn was $4 to cost of production, beans are $9 and wheat $6. So you can't get gun-shy of making sales here somehow because of the profit to your farm. You just can't ignore that. So we want to get 100% sold, combination cash. You know your crop insurance and use puts on the rest.
So you're going to be something in the neighborhood of 30% sold then?
In the cash side, we'd be 30, 40%,
yeah,
depending upon your crop insurance, and the balance will go in put options, these put options.
Anybody disagree with that kind of thing?
No, we're 40%. We like to go 50%. These futures trade $6, but we cover the rest in puts. If corn takes off in here, you can sell the cash down the road.
Dan?
I don't really going to give any specific percentage recommendations, but with the crop insurance products that farmers can purchase, and with the prices we have seen in soybeans and corn, maybe this is too simple. Soon as the month of February was over with, we knew what our prices were. The market basically gave you an opportunity to sell them above the average. So, the simple thing was to sell your insured bushels right out of the chute. And then maybe use puts or something like that for the uninsured portion and just hang on and see how things play out.
Hmm. Anybody, I guess if you look at it, does anybody think that not making a sale? You're already willing to sell, but producers have got to be asking you, especially on beans, because crop insurance is probably costing them twice what it did last year, about not using crop insurance this year for either corn or soybeans. Have you had that question, and do you urge them to use crop insurance?
Well, it depends on the individual situation. It varies greatly, but the thing on the crop insurance, some of those products only have a $3 window.
The CRC on corn, on soybeans,
beans, and $1.50 on corn. So if you're looking at beans may having a major correction, we could go below 10.30, and that could really put a dinger in your insurance program. So we recommend buying some 10, 10.20 puts to get that extra coverage if you don't go that route.
You can buy RA, it has unlimited, but the premium's pretty much almost double, I believe. So again, it's cost higher to buy the insurance, but we're talking about a lot higher values here. So again, what I went through for 2 days, it's all about protecting the income, protecting the value here, and it's going to cost more to do that because we're talking about much higher level of crop prices.
A lot of it depends upon what you want to do, whether or not you want to manage risk. If you're an individual that has paid a lot of money for cash rent, your input costs are quite high. You're probably wanting to manage risk. If you're someone that owns your ground, your machinery is pretty well depreciated out or paid off, you've got a lot of room to play for higher numbers because you can afford to take the risk of a major decline. So I think it still gets back to what you want to do, and that's the hardest thing that probably farmers have a hard time deciding on what they really want to do. They have to determine what they want for the crop, and then they got to go after it.
Wheat futures in Chicago, a high this week for the March at $12.47, a low at $10.44 and a quarter. A settlement price, 19.5 cents lower at $10.92 and a half. July at $10.68 and a half, up 68.5 cents from last week. Are all the fireworks done at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange at this point?
We've lost about 9-10 bucks off the high here, so I imagine it's cooled down for a while. We expect July wheat futures to develop a trading range here. It looks like it's got good resistance up around this 10.80, $11 range. Probably going to have good support just under $10, but we feel the acreage is a lot higher, and these next few reports probably will reveal that.
Maybe we ought to talk about acreage across the board. What do you think on acreage for corn? Daryl Good gave me some numbers earlier in the week this week talking about 92-93 million acres needed for corn, quite a few acres, 5 or 6 million acres more from last year for soybeans. Where do you think things will end up?
The USDA has already pushed a number. It's kind of in their winter outlook meeting. I guess we're looking on the corn side more like an 86, 87 million. Beans, 72, possibly 73, and the wheat acres certainly going up. It's the Western guys are going to be attracted to it. So the problem with those numbers are they really don't work unless you're going to really kill the demand side of the equation.
Well, they don't work if you're going to be bearish the market, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Todd. What we all think out here, we've seen the USDA come up with different numbers in the past, so maybe they're going to find some other acres and pull them somewhere else.
Now, corn's going to be lucky to have 85, and beans probably won't be below 75.
my biases lean that we're going to have a big bean acre increase, and but then on the other hand, a lot of that increase now, I understand producers are canceling soybean contracts in the South to plant cotton now. So cotton has got people's attention in the southern areas, so beans are losing some acres there that were originally intended to be soybeans here maybe the last 3-4 months. Corn, when you talk to seed corn people, their sales and that is kind of hard to determine, you know, whether their market share is increasing or decreasing. But there's plenty of seed corn to buy. You can buy that. There's no shortage of seed corn.
In just a couple of minutes, we'll continue our conversation with our panelists in studio, Kurt Kimmel, Dan Zwicker, and Chuck Shelby. And we'll be joined by Chip Flory. He's with Professional Farmers of America, otherwise known as Pro Farmer, in Iowa. Some final numbers for you. Live cattle this week, a $90.45 settlement price. They were off $252.50 from last week in the April. And the April lean hogs at $57.85 were down $1.10.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. There was no escape from winter this week as snow, sleet, freezing rain, and colder than normal temperatures continued in Illinois. Temperatures this first week of March were near normal in southern Illinois but were 5 degrees below normal in northwestern Illinois. The departures would have been even greater had it not been for the very warm weather last Sunday. At this point in March, we typically have highs around 40 north, in the mid-40s central, and in the low 50s in southern Illinois. After that brief brush with spring conditions last weekend, the weather jerked us back to the reality of winter. A system moving out of the southern plains early this week dropped up to 7 inches of snow across central and southwestern Illinois. Mixed in for good measure were sleet and freezing rain in many areas, especially in southeastern Illinois. Precipitation totals for the week were well above normal in the southern half of the state and in the northwestern corner of Illinois. This past February was the wettest on record in Illinois since 1895, and December through January, the winter period, was the third wettest winter. The storm system affecting southern portions of Illinois this weekend will pull in more cold air as it departs. Temperatures should moderate about midweek ahead of the next storm system. That will bring precipitation to Illinois about Thursday and then bring more cold air into the state for next weekend. Don't forget that we go on daylight saving time this weekend. Set your clocks ahead 1 hour Saturday night. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This was recorded on Friday, March the 7th. Our panelists in studio today, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Chuck Shelby of Risk Managed Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Our guest on the phone line is Chip Flory. He's the editor of the Pro Farmer newsletter. Good afternoon to you, Chip.
Thanks. Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, well, I got to ask you a couple of things. What do you think is the most important news in the world of ag this week? Is it actually the big drop in the price of soybeans, or is it the idea that there are basis only contracts out there from larger
there
commercials?
There you go. I think that's it, guys. We saw a good example of what can happen when one of the hedge funds this week couldn't meet a margin call on one of its mortgage bond positions, and they were forced to liquidate their position and get out of it. They just didn't have the operating capital to go ahead and continue to feed that thing margin calls. And I think that's what the Andersons and ADM and Cargill and Bunge are trying to do by offering these basis onlys, is to prevent themselves from getting into a situation. Now, it's hard to imagine that ADM or Cargill or the Andersons Bunge is going to run out of money for margin calls. But think about when these guys started putting on HTAs for 2008 crop corn. You know, there's a lot of $3 HTAs on 2008 crop corn out there. So they've been writing margin calls for a long time on some of those positions, and it's probably not millions of dollars of margin calls. It's probably billions of dollars of margin calls out there that the major, when you throw all the major grain merchandisers into the same bag, they've written a lot of margin checks over the last, you know, 13, 14, 15 months. And because of that, you know, going to basis only is a way to preserve your operating capital, and I think that's probably the big story. And the other thing I think that's very important is just the general economy. Lots of recession worries. The jobs data really kind of stunk for February, and the impact on the dollar. You know, the dollar made new lows this week again. Was down almost. Let's see. I think it was down almost a penny and a quarter on the week at the lowest point this morning. Came back and closed about a penny lower on the week. That's a huge move, unbelievable move. And what that does is it just allows U.S. grain prices to continue to show strength, and you don't see much. The importing countries just don't see much of an impact because of the lower value of the dollar. So that should help keep that demand pretty stiff. And like the guys were talking about earlier, I think it's got us pointed at some slightly lower carryover estimates when we get to the USDA reports on Tuesday.
I just want to make a comment. I can't speak for the other commercials, but as far as ADM went this week, we had bids at all of our country elevators for farmers for through January of 2009. So we did not go to basis bids. Farmers do have cash bids available at their local elevators. Now, there was a basis-only bid for Decatur, which is dealers only, but our country elevators kept our bids for the farmer out in the country for fall and early winter delivery.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent.
Well, bottom line, what good is a basis contract for a farmer, especially when there's considerable downside risk?
Yeah, it's only good if you also put the hedge on at the same time. That will set your price and set your basis and your the net price. You can calculate it today. What you're going to get paid for that grain? You may have to write some margin calls if the markets turn around and start going back up. But you will know what price you're going to get if you do the basis only with a hedge.
It transfers the risk from the elevator to the farmer when he decides to make that sale.
Right.
So the farmer's got to follow up with the hedge on his own then.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. You know, if you do a basis contract now, see, and that's a scary thing. I think a lot of guys think that if they write a basis contract, somehow, some way, today's futures price has something to do with what they're going to get paid in the fall when they deliver, and it has absolutely nothing to do with what they're going to get paid in the fall unless they also hedge. It's not a bad strategy because you are setting a price and you're getting that price set completely when you do that. And of course, if the market rallies, losses in your hedge account are going to be offset by gains in your cash commodity, and if the market drops, your hedge gains are going to be offset by a lower selling price on the cash. So whatever price you set with that strategy is the price that you will get this fall when you deliver.
Chip, as we head towards the Planted Acres report are coming up the end of the month, I know you do a lot of farmer talks, but what's your take on where these acres might end up?
Yeah, the survey that we did back in January indicated about 88 million acres of corn and 70 million acres of soybeans. I think those numbers are going to be pretty close. You know, FAPRI was out this week, projected a 91, I believe, on corn. Some of the numbers are starting to inch up a little bit, and I'm not exactly sure why. But there are some numbers, some analysts out there that are starting to push that corn number back up towards 90 million acres for 2008 seedings. Beans, they're trying to hold in that 70, 71. But if you push your corn acres into that 91, 92 million acre range, it gets real hard to plant 70 million bushels of beans. And that's basically what we need for 2008 to get our 2008-09 carryover back to kind of a steady level, be able to hold it steady with what we'll have left over at the end of this year. So, but the problem is with corn, if you're under if you're under last year's plantings, carryover is going down in 08-09. We're looking for use in 08-09 that's higher than what USDA's got plugged in is projecting. I'll admit that. But it's real easy to imagine total use in 08-09 of about 13.4 billion bushels. And unless we plant 93 million bushels, your carryover really does, it's hard to get it up from there. So USDA is looking for total use in 08-09 of about 13 billion bushels. So we're quite a bit higher. We'll admit that. And we've got more plugged into the feed side. But, you know, it's a long ways from getting to the end of the 08-09 marketing year, so there's a lot of things that can change between now and then. But it's going to be really, really difficult to push both corn and soybean carryover up in that 08-09 marketing year.
Why is demand for corn so inelastic, I guess, at this point?
Yeah, we are, and corn isn't used to dealing with that. Wheat, yeah, you know, we deal with inelastic demand in wheat all the time because, it really doesn't matter what the price of wheat is. Your end user is going to buy it, and they're going to buy what they need, no more, no less, regardless of price. Corn, we're dealing with inelastic demand for the first time in a long time, and that's coming out of the ethanol sector in the Western Corn Belt, and we're still pushing a lot of corn through that system, and then the cheaper dollar is helping keep the exports up, I think that's one of the things that a lot of guys just haven't paid a lot of attention to is the fact that as that dollar goes down, our corn price has been inching higher.
Chip, just a couple questions here. I guess as a farmer market advisor service, how do you handle maybe giving advice to the end user hog producers that's buying soybean meal and buying corn versus the farmer that's wanting to sell corn and soybeans these kind of price levels?
You have to be fast.
Yeah, okay. We took like $1.60 profits on some corn hedges, some long corn hedges. For the first quarter, some $85 profits on meal. And then on that January drop, we went ahead and covered it out as far as we could in the cash market. Stayed away from futures.
Chip, thanks much.
You bet. Thanks,
Chip,
guys.
Chip Flores is with Pro Farmer. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is in studio with us. He's out of Decatur, Illinois. Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. A final word from the three of you. We'll start with Chuck.
Certainly shows the violence of the market. It's high-risk, high-reward poker we're playing, guys, this year, so take advantage of it when you can.
Dan Zwicker?
Don't have a whole lot to add, probably, but it is going to be a challenging time here to kind of get this crop marketed and be satisfied with it. The market's going to kind of make you think two or three times what you should have did.
And Kurt Kimmel?
We feel the next bull market to emerge will be the meat sector as we go into 2009.
And that is this edition of Commodity Week for March the 7th. Something to keep in mind, visit our website at willag.org. We had a discussion there that you can listen to if you subscribe to our newsletter. From the president of the National Grain and Feed Association, talks about indemnity funds and basis contracts. That's all at willag.org. Just hit subscribe for our newsletter, and we'll send it to you this weekend.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to Commodity Week.